We'll talk about one in a different place. There's a store that sells new husbands. Now, the good thing is ladies can only go there one time, okay? Only one time, all right? Yeah, no return visits, so you got to make it work the first time. All sales final, baby, that's it. That's it. So here a woman may go to choose a husband one time. Among the instructions at the entrance is a description of how the store operates, and here we go. You may visit the store only once, it says. There are six floors, and the value of the products increase as the shopper ascends the flights. The shopper may choose any item from a particular floor or may choose to go up to the next floor, but you cannot go back down except to exit the building. All right? So a woman goes to the husband's store to find a husband. On the first floor, the sign on the door reads, "Floor 1, these men have jobs." She is intrigued, but continues to the second floor where the sign reads, "These men have jobs and love kids." That's nice, she thinks, but you know, I want more. So she continues upward. The third floor reads, "These men have jobs, love kids, and are extremely good looking." As a matter of fact, there's one of those life-size things of Todd Felkel at this one. Wow, she thinks. But she feels compelled to keep on going. She goes to the fourth floor where the sign reads, "These men have jobs, love kids, are drop-dead good-looking, and help with housework." Oh, mercy me, she said. I can hardly stand it. Still, she goes on to the fifth floor and the sign reads, "These men have jobs, love kids, are drop-dead good-looking, help with housework, and have a romantic streak." She is so tempted to stay there. She is so, all right, some of y'all can't handle this lady. Some of y'all are getting hot and bothered, I understand. So like all of y'all would do, she is so tempted to stay, but she goes to the sixth floor where the sign reads, "You are visitor number 31,456,112. There are no men on this floor. This floor exists solely as proof that women are impossible to please." Thank you for shopping at the husband store. Thanks to my A1 research assistant, Miss Shirley Stout of our First Impressions team, for finding that one for us today. Now, Robert, I want to know, did she read this one to you? No, she wouldn't tell her husband. Her husband wouldn't tell. She wouldn't even tell her husband this one. Yeah, she sent me one. I was tempted to tell it to my wife, but she said, "Bud, you better not tell that one tomorrow. You better not." No, but I didn't. No, I'm just playing. She wouldn't do that. Well, anyway, we're talking about the heat. We're talking about the fire. And we're talking about the fact in this series that when the pressure is on, the real you will come out. The real me will come out. The real you. The real all of us will come out. And we started last week looking at this particular passage found in John chapter 7. Where Jesus, we saw a couple weeks ago, where he was kind of taunted by his brothers who didn't really believe in him. They said, "Look, this thing's going on, this festival's going on. Why don't you go down there and show off? Why don't you go ahead and do your thing? We'll do our thing here." And Jesus says, "No, you guys go ahead, and I'll stay behind." And so he does that for a while, and then he goes. And we took this passage to look at some of the issues that exist in our lives around this thing called self-awareness. And I told you how big self-awareness is for me. Self-awareness kind of came to light when we were doing some work around our youngest daughter and some of the things that we were discovering there and some things we were learning. And one of the things that I recognized was that not only do children struggle with self-awareness, adults struggle with self-awareness as well. So often we have no clue about how we come across to other people because we're in our own little world and we, you know, will kind of have this, "Well, this is me and this is who I'm going to be," and da-da-da. And maybe without saying it explicitly, many of us have this implicit attitude that says, "Well, you know, it's who I am. I like it or leave it." You know, what it said, "Like it or leave it." Is that what it is? Is that what, "Love it or leave it"? Anyway, something like that, some cliche. And so we began to look at some of the things that we need to understand about self-awareness. And so we looked at two benefits or two reasons, if you will, for us to really develop self-awareness. And all of us have both of these. You have these, I have these, we all have these. And the first of these things that we talked about last week had to do with correcting character defects. All of us have character defects to some degree. Now, some have more than others. Some have character defects that are more obvious than others. But here's the definition again of a character defect. It's on your screen. They are intentional, repetitive, problematic behaviors rooted in sinful motivation. For example, some hurts, habits, hang-ups. All of us have those, right? But there is a sinful root in a character defect. This is something that I need to get rid of. And the irony is the only way to deal with a character defect is through a radical spiritual transformational experience. And you remember the second part of the equation? Hard work. Even when we have the experience with Jesus, it still takes work. I know many people who have the experience, right? And you know, sometimes they'll fall back into patterns of old behavior, right? Which can be very detrimental. And so we got to be real careful about that. We all, to a degree, have some character defects. And actually, you know, for many people, those are very small. I believe that as the growing Christ follower walks in their relationship with Jesus, as time goes on, character defects tend to be corrected. All right, they tend to go away. Now, I wish I could say that about the second thing that we want to talk about, and that's blind spots. I had another blind spot experience on the interstate this week on the rainy day. What was it, Wednesday or so? I was driving to Raleigh, and one of those things where I was kind of moving over, and boom, you know, all of a sudden, look back, here comes a car, and I jump back over real quickly in four lanes of traffic. You know, we have blind spots in our lives. And blind spots, self-awareness helps us with blind spots. If we don't have self-awareness, we don't see the blind spots. If we don't have self-awareness, we don't see the character defects, right? So the blind spot definition is this: accidental, repetitive, problematic behavior grounded in innocent naivety. We're largely innocent about blind spots. They're just there. We may not know they're there. And it takes real awareness and hard work to overcome blind spots. All of us have blind spots. Now, blind spots are not typically rooted in sinful behavior or in sinful desires. And so oftentimes they can be easier to correct, but they're often more difficult to detect. Does that make sense? Because of what it said, we're blind to it. We're blind to it. I might have a particular, I might have a particular desire about something, just anything, and that tends to blind me. And I tend to move forward in something, even if I shouldn't, simply because I feel this way or I think this way. With a character defect, there's usually a motivational problem. There's a motivation that is impure. There is a motivation in there that is sinful in nature, that is usually centered around me. It's a self-centered kind of thing. So let's move real quickly. We looked in this passage and we saw beginning in verse 14, and we're going to move real quickly today, so stay with me. In verse 14, we see where Jesus came to the festival. He went up to the temple, and about halfway through it, he began to teach. And people began to respond in various ways to him. And we began looking at Jesus' self-awareness and the self-awareness of the religious establishment leaders he was talking to, as well as self-awareness of those onlookers and those who were just happened to be there that day when he was teaching. And we talked about a couple of things. First of all, we said a couple of benefits of self-awareness, and we got to develop it, because self-awareness helps us get a better hold on our strengths and our weaknesses. We have an honest view of our strengths and our weaknesses. That's very important. Do you know what your strengths and your weaknesses are? You need to have a good, strong handle on what you're good at, what you're not so good at. And we got to be willing to get over the pride to admit those things, right, that we're not really, really good at. And at the same point, we've got to be legitimately humble enough to lean into those things and live into those things that we're strong. Why? Because to do otherwise is to deny God's power. And I believe that's one of the ways, I really believe that's one of the ways that we take God's name in vain. It's one of those hidden ways of taking God's name in vain by denying the strengths that he gives us. Does that make sense? Because we're denying his power, we're denying his work in our lives. And I believe the church is filled with people who are taking God's name in vain, not by using profane language, but rather by not utilizing their giftedness and their talents in the kingdom of God to grow it and to make it go further. I want you to think about that, and we need to ponder on that. So being aware of our strengths and weaknesses. Jesus said, my message is not my own.
It is rather what? It is the message of my Father. You see, Jesus' whole deal was to deflect people toward Him, toward God the Father. Your life and my life needs to be all about reflecting other people's views, not to us, but reflecting them and deflecting them to Jesus Christ. Does that make sense? That's what we need to do. And being aware of our strengths and weaknesses, knowing how to do that. Now, Jesus, we can say, well, He didn't have any weaknesses. No, you're probably right. But even not having weaknesses, He still didn't call attention to Himself, did He? He pushed the focus to His Father. And that's how we need to live our lives. We need to be self-aware enough to understand whether or not we're projecting ourselves or we're projecting Jesus in our lives. The second thing we talked about, the second benefit of self-awareness is that it earns the right to be heard. Now, Jesus taught them a lot of stuff. He got their attention, and they were thinking, man, this guy's really got some stuff worth listening to here. And then He hit them with a zinger. He had earned the right to be heard, and then He says, look, you guys got a real problem. Talking to the religious leaders, the establishment, and everybody that was around, He said, because you're messed up, you know. You're calling me demon-possessed. You're wrong about me. I am... You know, God the Father and I are one. He and I are one. And you're missing the boat. Not only are you missing the boat, you are allowing your selfishness, your desire to be the religious leaders and to manipulate people, etc., you're allowing that to take precedence over the truth. And He says, for example, in verse 19, He says, Moses gave you the law, but none of you obeys it. In fact, you're trying to kill me. I'm the one who is, you know, trying to bring the truth, and you're trying to kill me, and you're calling me demon-possessed. Well, here's the third thing that we began to touch on last week, but we'll kind of finish it up this week. Self-awareness helps us to deal with one of the issues that becomes real problematic in the lives of people. One of the worst things that we can be called in you know, if you're a Christian, you're a professing Christ follower, this is one of those words that you really don't want to hear, and that's hypocrite, right? Hypocrite. Self-awareness helps us to understand how to avoid falling into the trap of hypocrisy. Helps us not to give in to hypocrisy. Here Jesus said, look, I did one miracle on the Sabbath, and you were amazed. You know, but, He goes on to say, if the law that says that a baby boy should be circumcised on the eighth day, and that's what the law says, by the way. And by the way, medical science has also established that although they don't do that, for various reasons, the medical science has established that that is, in fact, the best day medically for a child to have circumcision, right? But He says, look, if a baby needs to be born on the eighth, be circumcised on the eighth day, and that also happens to fall on the Sabbath, well, you know what? There's a conflict there, right? But you know what? You circumcise that baby. And yet, because I healed somebody, Jesus said, on the Sabbath day, you get all over me. You call me all kind of names. You're really ugly to me. And, you know, that's hypocritical, Jesus said. Now, here was the problem. Jesus said, look, Jehovah God talked about love. Love overrides everything. And what you don't do, religious leaders, you don't inject the principles of love and grace into the law. You take the law as it is. You encourage the people in our society, Jesus said, to live a life of do's and don'ts, rules and regulations. When love and compassion is all about all that stuff in between. You see, when you live a life of love and compassion, it kind of gets a little more complicated because you don't have the rules and the do's and don'ts to drive you. You see, a life of do's and don'ts is pretty easy. It's pretty easy when you just live by rules. That's why Paul got all over the church when they allowed this thing called legalism to creep into their world and into their doctrine. He said, don't do that. That's not good. And it's you know, you got to live in the gray area. You got to live sometimes in the gray area where love and compassion might cause us to deal with situations that might be more difficult and even problematic. Well, in Matthew chapter 7, Jesus talked about in the Sermon on the Mount before this event that we're talking about today in John chapter 7. He said this to the masses as He was preaching His sermon. He said, why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own? How can you think of saying to your friend, let me help you get rid of that speck in your eye when you can't see past the log in your own eye? Hypocrite, first get rid of the log in your own eye, then you will see well enough to deal with the speck in your friend's eye. Now, can I tell you, a lot of people who are Christ followers, who profess to be Christ followers, use this verse to cause them to avoid taking a stand for anything. Because they equate taking a stand for something as putting themselves in opposition with someone else. And they say, well, I can't judge the way that they're thinking or the way that they, you know, the way that they're living or whatever. No, you can't judge. But folks, if you're a parent, you are called to assess the type of folks that your kids hang around. If you're, you as an individual, you, if as a professing Christ follower, you have to make sure that you assess accurately the kind of people that you are associating with. Are you around people who are going to drag you down? Are you going around people? Are you around people who are going to build you up? Okay. Well, all Jesus is saying is this: look, yeah, get the telephone pole out of your eye, for sure. But you know, it's okay to do this assessment. He talks about this in other parts of Scripture. Just make sure that you're working toward purity yourself. Does that make sense? Just make sure that you're working on getting your life straightened out as you also look at others and try to make determinations around your family, yourself, etc., and also in the interest of helping other people. Not that we are to push people away, but rather that we are find ways to help them also to come toward Jesus themselves. So Jesus said, you know, he knew dealing with fickle people. People are fickle, right? You and I, you're going to feel, there's something in your life today. You have an emotion today that you're going to feel differently about tomorrow for no apparent reason other than the fact that we're fickle. Almost anything can kind of push us one way or the other. The fourth thing that we need to understand is that self-awareness minimizes snap judgments. Self-awareness minimizes snap judgments. Now, how many of you would say that this statement is true about you? I tend to jump to conclusions too quickly, too often. Is anybody willing to have the courage to admit that? Yeah. We make snap judgments, don't we? We tend to get emotionally involved in something, and often when something tweaks an emotion, we just jump to a conclusion. I mean, I do it, right? You do it, I do it. I mean, it's something that happens. But, you know, it's not a real good thing. It's not a good thing. Because in the verses right before what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, he gave us these words: do not judge others and you'll not be judged, for you will be treated as you treat others. The standard you use in judging is the standard by which you will be judged. When we make snap judgments, guess what? We make ourselves subject to the snap judgments of others. Now, when you jump to conclusions, typically what happens, most of the time, is the conclusions that we come to are not usually positive things about other people. Have you noticed that? They're usually not the positive things about them. They are usually things that we assess as negative. And so Jesus says, if that's the way you want to live your life, fine. But you know what? You're going to find yourself being subject to that very same line of thinking by other people. It's not good. As a matter of fact, he told the folks that he was teaching here in John chapter 7, he said, look beneath the surface so you can judge correctly. You got that one? This is one of the wisest things that we'll ever find. Look beneath the surface so you can judge correctly. In other words, get the facts. Do not rely on just one person's side of the story. Do not jump to conclusions. So many of us, this is how we are. We believe the last person we listen to. That's it. And we formulate our opinion without hearing both sides. That can be devastating. And oftentimes when we hear both sides, we're often so emotionally engaged in one side or the other that we will still refuse to see things objectively. That is not a very good thing. As a matter of fact, for many people, their sense of right and wrong is based on the aggregated desires, motives, habits, and dysfunctions of those in their circle of interest. Here's what that means. That means if I got a vested interest, or I got a family member or somebody that has a vested interest in a situation, and you know, or my kid gets you know, something involved, they do something wrong and they got to suffer consequences, and I don't like that, for many people, for many parents, their sense of right and wrong just goes out the window. And all they begin to care about is the selfish self-interest of their kids or themselves. Does that make sense? I mean, you know what I'm talking about. I've seen parents like go, they have these personality changes, you know, and they become somebody totally different when they begin standing up for their children, you know. Helicopter parents, all right? That's one of the things that we say about folks like that. So, look, don't fall into knee-jerk reactions. Look beneath the surface. Do you realize that it takes time and energy to look beneath the surface? It really does. It really does. And oftentimes we've got to have conversations, civil, loving, respectful conversations with people on the other side of an issue. Okay? And that is a part of doing what? Of looking beneath the surface in order to get the full story. Here's the fifth thing about self-awareness. This is the one that I've really come to really embrace in the last few years. Self-awareness helps us know just what we don't know. Self-awareness helps us know just what we don't know. I was having a conversation with somebody last night. We were at my home church did this ham and egg supper thing. So my wife went out there, and you know, the inside of my mouth is still shriveled up and like, you know, from the salt and the ham that we had, the country ham. But, you know, I was talking to somebody about this. You were talking about how, you know, you go out there and you don't recognize anybody because they're all older and et cetera, you know, and they all look different. Fortunately, everybody recognized me. I guess it's the lotion that I use on my face. But anyway, I was talking about that. You know what I'm realizing more and more as I get older just how much I don't know. And you know, when I was a teenager, a young adult, there was nothing I didn't know. Nothing at all. I knew it all. And I had it all. But you know what? As I got to be an adult and I began to grow and I realized, you know what? There are things I don't know. And I've actually got to go to people and ask for help because I don't know. And you know what? I'm realizing more and more and more every day the vast scope of what I don't know. And you know what? That's one of the most freeing things I've ever experienced. It really is. It really is. Because, you know, when I thought I knew everything, all the pressure was on me. You know? It was all on me. So God says, hey, I'll share that with you. So anyway, here's what we got. We got the people who are in the audience. Now picture this. Jesus' argument is largely with the religious leaders. Then you got all these other people who are called innocent bystanders. They're hearing the arguments that Jesus and the religious leaders are making. And so they speak up and they say, well, how could he be what? Well, back in verse 25, some of the people who lived in Jerusalem started to ask each other, isn't this the man that they're trying to kill? But here he is speaking in public and they say nothing to him. Could our leaders possibly believe that he is the Messiah? But, they say, how could he be? For we know where this man comes from. When the Messiah comes, he will simply appear. No one will know where he comes from. No one. Now, that was so wrong. They were so wrong. Because what did all the prophecies say? What are some of the things the prophets said? And then when we get into our Christmas series the week after Thanksgiving, we're going to talk about some of these things specifically. If they had read the prophets, they would have known that Jesus, the Messiah, was going to be born where? Bethlehem. They also knew that his mom was going to be a virgin, right? Those are just two of the many things. They would have known that he was going to come out of the tribe of Judah. They would have known all these things. But here's the problem. It's not that these people were ignorant. Well, they were ignorant. They weren't ignorant. They weren't stupid. Let me put it this way. They were ignorant. You know why? Because the religious leaders had decided to withhold the actual Old Testament writings from them. They couldn't just go out and buy a Bible. They didn't have a Bible at every house. They had very few. All right, very few recording scripts, if you will, of the books of the law and the prophets were in existence. So what the leaders did, they would mix and match what they thought they needed to know from the word with their own oral traditions. That's the way that the religious leaders that Jesus was going after was holding to their power. And so they didn't know. So life occurs when we realize what we don't know. Fortunately, we today have the full written word, recorded word. But you know what the sad thing about it is? Even though we got this, by and large, my guess is the average person probably doesn't know any more about God, about Jesus, than they did back in the times of Jesus and before. That's the sad part about it. And yet we have full revelation of the fullness of God. Finally, self-awareness leads to better quality decisions. You see, when I'm self-aware and I recognize how I'm coming across and I understand how I'm coming across to other people, that is going to affect the way I make decisions. Because I'm going to do a much better job of pulling myself out of the equation and trying to look for the best interests of other people around me. Isn't that what life's about anyway? Pulling myself out of the equation and finding what's best for others. Because our lives were designed not to be lived for our benefit, but for rather the benefit of others. Many among the crowds at the temple believed in Jesus. After all, they said, would you expect the Messiah to do more miraculous signs than this guy's done? They said, look, he's great. Look at what he's done. It's been amazing what he's done. This has got to be him. This is the Messiah. And as a result, you know what happened? Many people in the crowd, the bystanders, in the fringes, came to know Christ. They came to know him. At that moment, on that day, they absolutely gave in to who he really is. Well, I think it's really cool that those who would choose to follow Jesus would put aside their fears and their inhibitions, and they would choose intellectual honesty. Now, what do we do with this? What do we do with this? Our purpose today and last week is to help us understand a little bit more about the question of who we're projecting. Jesus only wanted to project his Father, the reality of the Father God. And you know, I often wonder, how do we analyze and how do we keep track? How do we remain self-aware enough to understand who it is we're projecting? You know, are you projecting yourself? You know, people with selfish motivations tend to really drive people to want to make things all about them. But you know, when I see the Savior of the world choosing not to make it all about him, I mean, doesn't that tell us something? I mean, we could easily make a call. He's the big dog. He's top. Nobody's better than him. But yet and still, he chose not to make things about himself. He chose to point people to Jesus. And you know what? Our levels of self-awareness often are so low. They are so non-existent that we forget who we were placed here and who Jesus called us to project. Not ourselves, but him. So this week I want you to deal with the issue and the question of, you know, who am I projecting? Am I becoming more self-aware? Now I will say that if as you're getting older, you're thinking more like you know it all and you've got all the answers and da-da-da, you're not becoming self-aware. You're not. Some of the things we talked about today are some of the signs of self-awareness. If some of these things are happening in your life, you know, that's probably a good sign. If some of these things were foreign to you or you were thinking, oh, bud, then you probably got a problem. Your self-awareness is so key to the ability. No, God can do anything, but it is so key to the level at which God will choose to use you in building his kingdom. You know, that's what the whole heavenly reward system is about anyway. So I encourage you this week, ask the question, who am I projecting? How do I need to become more self-aware? Let's pray. Father, thank you for your word as it touches us.